updates to the IBA ethics rules regarding conflicts of interest, and updates to the CTAC arbitration rules, and then the down low on a crypto dispute that you might find interesting. And after all of that, we'll sit down and have a conversation live from Vienna with the Moot Alumni Association. All this on today's episode of the show. Welcome back to Disputes Digest with Chris Campbell. I'm still your host, and thank you for joining me for another weekly dive into international legal news. If you haven't already, we'd greatly appreciate it if you take a moment and follow us on LinkedIn, your podcasting platform of choice, and if you're really feeling spirited, leave us a review. Before we get into it this week, a couple of notes into that last story you heard at the intro. As you'll have seen by now, the latest episode of our collaborative series, Disputes Decoded, by ArbTech is available on their feed. And this time, it's all about crypto disputes and crypto regulation. We sit down with two leading figures in the field, and if you like it, if that's something that's interesting to you, go check it out. All right, enough pre-show. Let's get into the news. Let's start off this week at the IBA, the International Bar Association, and in particular, the IBA's Guidelines on Conflicts of Interest in International Arbitration, commonly known as the IBA Guidelines, which are at the forefront of ensuring transparency and fairness. First introduced in 2004 and updated again in 2014, these guidelines have just undergone a revision to stay in step with changing landscapes in dispute resolution. Recognized globally from common law to civil law jurisdictions and even persuasive in some national courts like Canada, the IBA guidelines serve as a cornerstone for arbitral impartiality and independence. They offer a comprehensive framework without superseding applicable laws or party agreements, essentially acting as a soft law instrument that fills gaps and guides practice. The 2024 amendments touch on various areas, notably emphasizing the duty of arbitrators to disclose all relevant facts and circumstances known to them that could affect their impartiality. This change aims to address the complexity of modern legal practices and the nuanced relationships within the arbitral process. This represents a significant shift which is seen in the guidelines' approach to professional secrecy, where arbitrators faced with disclosure barriers are advised to decline or resign from appointments, underscoring the paramount importance of transparency. Moreover, the guidelines now encourage parties to proactively investigate potential conflicts, broadening the scope of relationships requiring disclosure. This includes any connections with entities or individuals over which a party has a controlling influence. Part 2 of the guidelines, featuring the, quote, traffic light system, has been refined to better address situations that may raise doubts about an arbitrator's impartiality. The orange list, in particular, has expanded to include scenarios such as repeated appointments by the same parties or law firms and serving in multiple roles across different arbitrations, reflecting the interconnected nature of this particular legal practice. These updates, while subtle, could have profound implications, especially in industries like construction, where the pool of arbitrators and experts is relatively small and interconnected. As the guidelines gain recognition in legal proceedings worldwide, their influence on ensuring ethical standards in arbitration cannot be overstated, making them an essential tool, or at least a highly advised tool, for legal practitioners across the globe. Time will tell how these revisions are perceived, but for now, they are here, and let's wait to see what their impact is. Then, let's head to China, where the China International Economic Trade and Arbitration Commission, CETEC, has ushered in a new era with its updated arbitration rules, replacing the set from 2015. The rule changes went into effect at the beginning of this year and represent a significant overhaul affecting over 30 provisions, aligns with international standards, anticipates updates to China's arbitration law, and embraces the digital age, marking a milestone for CETEC as a leading arbitration body in Asia. Key updates include a shift towards the principle of competence, allowing arbitral tribunals to decide on their jurisdiction, reflecting global norms within the framework of existing PRC laws. The change anticipates revisions to China's arbitration law, potentially empowering tribunals further. The rules have expanded to facilitate multi-contract arbitrations and consolidate disputes involving related contracts, enhancing procedural efficiency and similar actions. This aligns CTAC with other top arbitration centers like Singapore's CIAC or Hong Kong's HKIAC. Another significant amendment permits CTAC to request conservatory measures from foreign courts, not just PRC courts, broadening the scope for parties seeking interim relief. The rules also encourage digital arbitration processes, including online hearings and electronic delivery of awards, reflecting practices adopted during the COVID-19 pandemic. For the first time, CTAC introduces regulations on third-party funding, requiring prompt disclosure of such arrangements, aligning with trends in international arbitration for transparency. The introduction of an early dismissal mechanism allows for the rejection of claims or counterclaims lacking legal merit or jurisdiction, a practice in line with international arbitration standards, but new to the PRC context. Other noteworthy features include guidelines on evidence application flexibility, addressing non-compliance with escalation clauses, preventing conflicts of interest through counsel changes, and more options for appointing arbitrators. These adjustments, coupled with provisions for ad hoc arbitration support, underline CTAC's commitment to enhancing arbitration efficiency, flexibility, and transparency, solidifying its status in Asia's arbitration landscape. Then for a final news story this week, let's take a look back at a story from the end of March. On March 26, 2024, a groundbreaking move by the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, targeted KuCoin, a non-U.S. cryptocurrency exchange, with a comprehensive complaint filed in New York's Southern District Court. This legal action shines a spotlight on the evolving landscapes of digital asset regulation, underscoring the CFTC's stance on cryptocurrencies as commodities and delineating its regulatory domain both domestically and internationally. The heart of the CFTC's case revolves around a clear demarcation of certain digital assets, including Bitcoin, BTC, Ether, ETH, and Litecoin, LTC, as commodities, a designation that brings these assets under the CFTC's regulation umbrella. The move challenges the jurisdictional boundaries between CFTC and the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, especially in the context of assets that straddle the lines between securities and commodities. KuCoin's operations came under scrutiny for multiple alleged breaches of the Commodity Exchange Act, CEA, and associated regulations, notably its failure to implement anti-money laundering protocols as mandated. The CFTC's allegations extend to KuCoin's offerings of futures and swaps on digital assets to U.S. residents without proper registration as a Foreign Board of Trade FBOT or Swap Execution Facility, SEF. Among other designations. The CFTC's proposed sanctions are severe, seeking a permanent operational ban for KuCoin in the United States, alongside restitution and civil penalties. The case underscores the regulatory expectations for cryptocurrency exchanges operating within U.S. jurisdiction, highlighting the necessity for compliance with established financial laws and regulation. In parallel, criminal charges were also filed by the Department of Justice, further intensifying the legal challenges faced by KuCoin. The comprehensive legal action underscores the urgent need for clarity and compliance within a rapidly evolving digital assets marketplace. So that's it for the news this week. We'll be right back after a conversation with the Moot Alumni Association. So we'll see you on the other side of the show to wrap up. Hey there, folks. This is Chris Campbell here at the 31st occasion of the Vis Moot here in Vienna, Austria. We are usually doing interviews this week. We are not doing that this week because we have other content we are going to be bringing you. But of course, we could not come to Vienna and leave out a favorite organization, a favorite group that we love to talk to, and that is the Moot Alumni Association of the MAA. And with me today, I've got two very special guests, Ipek and Hannah. Hey, ladies, welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris. Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having us.
Very well, very well. And so it occurs to me that there might be people listening to Tales of the Tribunal, and they might say, what is the MAA? Is that a fighting competition? You know, what is that all about? Can one of you tell us all about that?
So let's clarify that. It's not MMA, it's MAA, stands for Moot Alumni Association. So basically, we try to be that bridge between the current Mooties and the alumni. And we organize events throughout this week in Vienna and also Hong Kong. And also, we have lots of initiatives that we launch throughout the year.
Fantastic, fantastic. And how have you been involved with the MAA over the years?
Would you like to start, Hannah?
Sure, sure. So I've been a member of the diversity and inclusion team, and we organized a number of online events to represent underrepresented and less visible parts of the arbitration community, to promote them, to give them voice.
Fantastic, fantastic. And yeah, I mean, you know, so for those listening as well, MAA has been a big part of my MOOT journey. I was a part of the organization for a number of years. Still am a member. I'm not in leadership anymore, but I loved it because there are things like, one of the things that I love that you guys do is the Vindobono Journal. You know, it's a publication. You have opportunities to even be an observer at the UN. You have service projects. I mean, so much really cool stuff that you can do to be involved with the MOOT, but also the arbitration community as a whole.
Yeah, that's completely right. And I should also add that we have an amazing mentor-mentee program, which brings a senior member of the arbitration and CASG community with the younger generation, which we are very proud of.
And anyway, for me, MAA is about people, and I think the core team is just a bunch of great people that does a lot of good things. There are a lot of different committees. You can organize conferences and events. You can take care of Vindobono Journal. You can build relations with other organizations. So I think everyone can find something in the core team that kind of align with the interests.
Okay, and final question for the folks listening at home. Maybe they're on the fence. Maybe they're thinking about joining the MAA. They don't really know. Tell them, one, what does it take to join the MAA, and why should they do it right now as soon as they hang up from this call?
Okay, so first question, it's very easy. Go www.maa.net, and it's just one click away. So we have premium and also free membership. So regardless of if you're a student, if you're a professional, you can be part of the MAA. And why you should become part of the MAA, if you're a Mooty, you know it's a life-changing experience. It's changed your life. Let's help other Mooties to change their lives too.
I agree. And if you are in Vienna, it's as easy as just scanning the QR code and at the MAA banner, which is around MAA desk. And second question, join the great community, join the fun, join the group of people that help other students to feel better during Vienna and Hong Kong.
Very well said. So you heard it here first, folks. The MOOT Alumni Association, a great organization. Head on over to MAA.net or check them out on LinkedIn, their website. So many great initiatives. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next time on a special segment of Disputes Digest by Tales of the Tribunal. And we'll see y'all next time. And that's it for the news this week. That was a fun conversation with the MAA, and if you want to know more, we'll include a link to the website in our show notes. Finally, as the VisMoot season draws to a close, we'll put a cap on it by simply saying keep an eye out for some cool events heading into the fall and, well, next season. And I want to give three special shout-outs related to the Vis and also sort of coming out of it. First, I'd like to give a very special shout out to the members of the Mysterious Band that debuted in Vienna. If you were there, if you know, you know, okay? Second, to all the Mooties who participated in Vienna, and especially my two teams at the University of South Carolina, Jack, Kirsten, Hunter, Joshua, Will, and Tony, and the Charleston School of Law, Belle, Alyssa, Allie, Jessica, and Donovan. Thank you so much for a great season and already looking forward to the next one. Third and finally, a very special shout out to someone who I owe an immense debt and a large reason why I became a coach in the Vis. When I was a junior and senior in high school, I was lucky enough to participate in the mock trial teams for Irmo High School, go Yellow Jackets. For the first year I participated, we did not have a coach and we had to teach ourselves. But for our second season, we had a law student from the University of South Carolina School of Law, Joseph Bias, who was willing to be our coach. Joseph was a fantastic coach who, aside from reining in over the top opening statements and cross-examination strategies, was certainly an influence on me and my teammates in our education, but especially his notions of giving back to your community and your profession. He is a major reason why I am so passionate about coaching in the Vis. Joseph is now an in-house counsel in my native Columbia, South Carolina, where, among other things, he had his own podcast series called Direct Examination, which is still available if you want to learn some things about South Carolina law. He's also an avid fan of the Wofford Terriers, sweater vests in general, and ranking Halloween candy. Yeah, that last one is a little bit off the beaten path, but if you ever talk to him, you should absolutely ask him about it. Joseph, we want to give you a round of applause, a hearty thank you for all that you did for me through mock trial and beyond, and for all the students that you've coached since. Disputes Digest is produced by Mobetta Solutions. Show music is by Joshua and Jaden Campbell. Thanks for listening. This has been Disputes Digest by Tales of the Tribunal, and we will see y'all next time. None of the views shared today or in any episode of Disputes Digest is presented as legal advice nor advice of any kind. No compensation was provided to any organization or party for their inclusion on the show, nor do any of the statements made represent any particular organization, legal position, or viewpoint. All interviewees or organizations included appear on an arm's length basis, and their appearance should not be construed as any bias or preferred affiliation with the host or host's employer. All rights reserved.